Believe it or not, I got married in a casino. My father-in-law discovered that in the Swiss spa resorts in Switzerland, the casinos were closed for half a year, and he managed to get a lovely hall and beautiful gardens. So can you imagine the teasing that I got before I got married? Oh, you're taking a gamble. What do you think of the odds? And you're in a no-win situation. Anyway, it's not just the casino we're going to talk about. What about a simple game of cards with money? There are various kinds of gambling, and it's very interesting to delve into sources to see exactly what we are told. In the modern day, we've got practical trials relating to what about Chinese auctions, school raffles, national lottery, what about someone who deals in stocks and shares? What are the boundaries of gambling? Is it osa or is it muta, or is it simply immoral? What are the issues which we're going to try and investigate? And an interesting Gemara in Chulin, Tzadi Aleph on the base, talks about the fight that Yaakov Avinu had with the Sarosh Shel Esav. We all know about the wrestling match. And when the angel said he's got to run off, he's got to go quickly because dawn is beginning to break, Yaakov Avinu asks him, why is that? Why are you trying to hide? Are you a ganav? Or are you a kuvyustus, is the word used. And kuvyustus comes from kuvya. Someone who gambles is masachet the kuvya. So the Rabbeinu Chananel is brought by Tosfos to explain that Yaakov Avinu was asking him if he's a gambler, because gamblers, once it gets light, they try to hide from people because they owe lots of money. Sadly, I had somebody coming to me not very long ago, Heimish a fellow, asking if I could give him a loan. And assuming that he was very hard up, I had some money ready to pay the tax man. So he said, look, I'll give it back to you next week. So I gave him some money, and I still haven't got it back. And since then, I saw an advert in the Jewish Tribune saying that there's a certain person in the community who keeps asking people for money, don't lend to him. And I have found out that this is somebody who is a gambling addict. Well, we will look at that as well and see what might be written in our sources about gambling addiction. But it all starts with the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel, which is Daf Chaf Dalet on the base, talks about somebody who is Masachik Bekuvya or Mafricha Yonim, racing pigeons, is Posel La'edus. It may not give testimony in court. So it doesn't say it's illegal, it doesn't say it's osur, but it says that that person may not be used, is not reliable for giving edus. So not only witnesses, but they're disqualified to be judges as well. So Rabbi Yehuda says this applies to somebody who's got no other occupation. And the Gemara there investigates what are the reasons for being invalidated, being disqualified. So Rami Bachamo says it's osur mishum asmachto. He says you are not allowed to gamble because it is an asmachto. What is asmachto? That you're making a conditional offer to pay money, but you have this conviction that that condition won't happen. So you put money on the table, you're playing a game of cards, but really you don't want to give away that money. You want to win everybody else's money. And the only reason why you're putting down your money, he says, is to give other people the confidence that they might win, but you only really do it so that you should win. Therefore, you're not making a proper kinyan to somebody else with that money. And since you're not making a proper kinyan, there's no proper acquisition with that money, then it's called gezel drabono. It's a form of theft, not min ha-Torah, but min drabono. That's the way Rashi explains it. And then the other opinion in the Gemara is Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, it's not the yeshuva shalolom. It's not the normal manner of behaving in the world. Or as we say in Yiddish, it's not menschlichkeit. So then he's bringing an immoral tone to it, not an illegal tone to it. And he is saying that in the Gemara there, that if you are earning something else, then it's okay. Why? Because according to him, it's something which, you know, either you occupy yourself with Torah or you occupy yourself with Malacha and you earn an honest living, and it doesn't matter how you earn a living as long as it's honest. But if the only way you're earning your livelihood is by gambling, he says that is not right. You are disqualified from being a witness because you're not b'yeshuva shel olam. You're not behaving in the normal manner of the world. So this is not an asmachta according to him. He says the din of asmachta about this conditional offer is not relevant in his view. And we'll try and understand a little bit why. The Gemara doesn't actually give a firm ruling as to whom we paskin by. But Rav Sheshis is supported by Rabbi Yehuda that only full-time gamblers are disqualified. Now what is this idea of asmachto? We'll go into it just a tiny bit because it can take up a long time. But an asmachto is where the individual promises to pay on fulfillment of some condition. And he believes that this condition won't happen. There are about three examples in Shas of asmachto. For example, one of them, Bavamet Siodaf Kustalad on the base, is when a tenant farmer takes over some land and he promises that if he does not work the land properly, he will pay a fine to the landlord of, say, 1,000 zuz. So that's an asmachta, because the tenant farmer has the intention of working the land, but he wants to convince the fellow to let the land to him. So he gives this promise, but he's got no intention of paying this 1,000 zuz. So that's called asmachta. So the Gemara asks, is asmachta kanyo or lo kanyo? Is it? A very recent experience which happened to me just now on Pesach was when my 18-year-old son said to me something which he said is in the Mishnah Berurah, and I couldn't recall it being in the Mishnah Berurah, some obscure din about Hilchos Pesach relating to leaning when you say the Haggadah. And although there are certain sources which say you don't lean, you lean for your matzah morah, he said you don't lean at all for when you're saying the story. And I looked at him with puzzlement. He said to me, the Mishnah Berurah says this. And I, for that moment of temporary insanity, I couldn't recall the Mishnah Berurah. So I said, no, if you can show me when the Mishnah Berurah says that, I'll give you a shas. That's where I... And a few hours later, he says to me, Daddy, can I show you something? And there it was. It was in the Mishnah Berurah. So you can ask, alright, I'm going to give him the shas, whatever. But you can say, it was a form of asmachta. Why? Because I had no intention of giving him that shas. I simply believed that this condition would never come to fruition. Made was not really a miser kinyan, and therefore I could argue, I could back out of the promise saying it wasn't a proper kinyan. Alright, that's not the way I behaved with my kids, and frankly I was quite proud of him. But that's the idea of asmachta. Now according to Rami Bar Chamo, a gambler's bet is a promise he believes he won't have to keep. But if that's the case, why, according to Rav Sheshis, is there no asmachto? And this is an interesting discussion amongst various Rishonim, which we'll just touch on. According to Rashi, in asmachto, the promiser believes it's in his own power that this condition will come into effect. Like the farmer believes it's in his power that the land will be worked upon. And so therefore, that's when there's a valid asmachto. Biyodo uses the expression, Rashi says. Biyodo, it's in his hands. Whereas when you're in gambling, it's subject to pure chance. And when it's subject to pure chance, then you can't say then asmachto, because it's not biyodo, it's not under his control. Alright, the question is, with racing pigeons, mafrichayonim, is there a skill involved? And therefore it might be in his hands, but there's still subject to chance. So the Re writes in Tosfos Sanhedrin Kaf Dalet that an asmachta is where the fulfillment depends partly on oneself and partly on others, or it's entirely in one's own control. But gambling, he says, is totally out of one's control. And Rabbeinu Tam says on this, where the promise is merely to induce a person to rely on one's word, that is what you might call an asmachta. But gambling, he says, is an exchange of mutual promises. It's where two people are both promising each other. So that's why, according to Rav Sheshis, there's no asmachta. And he goes on Yeshiva Shelolom. And it seems, according to Rav Sheshis, that even if you are, he says, as long as you are working in some occupation, then you are involved in Yeshiva Shelolom. So even if you're flying planes for your livelihood, as you do, Joel, for one hour a week, even if it's only a small amount, then according to Rav Sheshis, you're allowed to have a flutter in terms of gambling, because he doesn't regard it as asmachta, therefore he doesn't regard it as gezel derabbanon, and you are involved in yeshiva shalolom, because you are earning a livelihood apart from that, and therefore you're regarded as somebody who's trustworthy when you are giving edus. I should point out, though, that this disqualification of edus does not apply when one is certifying that to enable a woman to remarry an aguna, to say that her husband has died, that person's eidus is considered okay. We do accept it, and it's only because this is a dinyan of gezeila d'rabbanon that Chazal were disqualifying on lesser forms of eidus. But for this, they accepted his eidus. So, do we follow Rav Sheshes or Rabbi Bachano? Do we say asmachto and there's a gezeila d'rabbanon, or do we say yeshiva shalolom? So there's a bit of differences amongst the Rishonim. The Rif in Sanhedrin, Tosus in Sanhedrin Daf Dalet, and Tosus in Eruvin Pei Beis, and the Rambam in Hilchas Eidus in Perek Yud Halacha Dalet leans towards the fact that there is no asmachto at all, and therefore, unless you're a full-time gambler, you're a professional gambler, then otherwise it's okay to have a flutter. However, there are others who say differently. There is a Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Ches, on the base, which talks about casting lots on Shabbos. And there it's talking about you're in a household, you're playing with your children, and for distributing portions, like you have big pieces of cake or small pieces of cake, and so you're drawing lots as to who gets what. So the Mishnah is there saying, as long as you don't make a lottery of a large portion against small portions, that's otherwise a problem on Shabbos. Why? Because it might lead to weighing and measuring, which you shouldn't do on Shabbos, unless it's for a Dvar Mitzvah. So the Gemara there is distinguishing between family and outsiders. But the Gemara there is saying, well, if it's a lottery of large against small, then it should be forbidden even on a weekday, not just on Shabbos. Why? Because of Masachet Bekuvia, like playing dice. So therefore, even according to that Gemara, even on occasional basis, gambling would be awesome. Gambling would be forbidden, even if you are involved in a full-time occupation, because the implication there of the Gemara is that gambling is also generally. And this is brought by Rav Yosef Tov Elam, who was quoted by the Hagos, Mordechai in Sanhedrin, Gimel Tov Shinayim Beis, who says, Osur, gambling, he says, is forbidden. And he writes a teshuva about when people were playing a game to do with nuts. He says, and there was money involved, a court can force a winner to return the money which was won. Why? Number one, he says, asmachto. Two, he says, gezel d'rabbanon. And three, he says, the players are disqualified as witnesses, and therefore it should not be done. And the most strong terminology I came across was in the Shalos Teshuvos of the Rivash. In chapter 432, he forbids gambling, and he says, even if you consider gambling to be legal, he says it's disgusting, it's abominable, and it's repulsive, and he says one may not do it. So you've got here some differences emerging between the two views of Rav Sheshes and Rabbi Bar Chamo. Because if you go according to the view of Rami Bar Chama, who says asmachto and gezeila d'rabbanon, then according to him, even once a year you're not allowed to gamble. Even on Hanukkah you can't take part in a Hanukkah spiel. And otherwise, if you go according to the view who says yeshuvo shalolom, that you've got a livelihood, well then, if you've got a 9-to-5 job, you can spend all the rest of your time in Las Vegas in gambling casinos. So how do we draw the line? On the other hand, if you always lose in your gambling, then according to the first opinion, you're okay, you haven't done anything wrong because you haven't done any gezeila. But according to the other opinion, you're going against yeshiva shalolom. There is an idea of lifnei iver, okay. Lifnei iver lo sitein nifshal. There is another view, apart from the sets of Rishonim we've spoken about, a sort of middle way view, which is Rabbi Leo of Vienna of Tosus, brought in the Mordechai Sanhedrin in Gimel in Pats in Sif 691, and he says it depends on the location of the money which is being used for the gambling. Where is that money? If that money is lying on the table, he says, and that table, especially if it's family, is probably owned by the gamblers. So if the money is put on the table, he says there is a kinyan chotzer, there is an acquisition. Because by being put on the table, which is owned by the gamblers, a kinyan is taking place, and therefore you don't have to worry about a smachta, which is saying, lo kanyo, it's not causing a kinyan. However, if the money is not put down on the table, and it's still in your pocket when you're doing the gambling, he says there's no maisa kinyan, therefore there's an asmachta, and therefore it's forbidden.
When you lose, put the money on the table, there's a kinyan there.
Well, if the money's on the table at the beginning when you start playing the game of cards...
You lose and you put it on the table and the winner picks it up. And he acquires the money then.
Well, is it before the game of cards starts or after? So if you're putting down the money first, he says there's a kinyan chotzer. But if you don't put the money down first, then when you hand over the money afterwards, there has not been any kinyan chotzer. You're not doing a proper maaser kinyan because you don't really want to hand over the money. And therefore, he says, it's an asmachto, and therefore it's a gezeila derabbanan, and it's like theft. So the Rambam is a bit more perplexing on this. Because although the Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, in Perek Yud Halacha Dalet, says that you're only disqualified if you have no other job, no other profession, and he uses the word avak gezel, the dust of theft, which is then the view of Rav Sheshes. If you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Gezel of Aveda and Perek Yud Halacha Yud, he seems to lean according to the review of Rami Bar Chama, who says that it's a gezela drabono. A number of commentaries try to settle this apparent contradiction in the Rambam, and the Ram holds in Sanhedrin Chafdalad that the Rambam is really forbidding gambling, like we said in Gemara Shabbos, with the drawing of lots. But if it's part-time, it won't disqualify you to be a witness. So although he's presuming against it generally, he's saying you won't be disqualified as a witness in Hilchos Eidos, where he's talking about the qualifications of witnesses. So if we bring this down to the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Cairo in Shulchan Aruch is of the view in Choshe Mishpat Shin Samach Tesif Gimel that he takes the stricter line. There's a gezeila derabbanan, it's like theft. So he's bringing the Rambam's true view down. However, the Ramah, whom the Ashkenazim go by, leans a bit towards the flexible side, and he says if a person has a job, then it's okay, and he says the custom is to allow it. So that doesn't mean you should all now go straight away to Million Hill and Petty Power and Ladbrokes. Let's finish first what we've got to say. The Aruch HaShulchan in Siman Reish Gimel talks about regular gambling being osur, but the occasional gamble he doesn't give an isur to. Last night Michael Israel asked me about the idea of drawing lots generally, the idea of Goral, and he says, don't we find this in the Torah? There are a number of instances where we find in Tanakh, in fact in Halacha, in Yerid HaKufayin Tes, it says you shouldn't decide things simply by drawing lots. But in the Torah itself, or in Tanakh itself, we do find certain instances of drawing lots. In fact, Eretz Yisrael was divided between the tribes, not only with the Urim and the Tumim, but also with Goral, with drawing lots. There's the story of Ochon in Sefer Yahshua, who took some spoil from Yericho against the rules, and the sparkle was missing on the Urim Tumim for Shevet Yehuda, and lots were drawn on the Shevet Yehuda, and it came out as Ochon being the culprit, even though he had denied at first taking anything, and he was the culprit, and as a result Bnei Israel lost in a subsequent battle. And then there's a story of Yochanan with Shaul in Shmuel Aleph Yudal Mem Aleph, where there was also lots drawn. But all these examples in Tanakh were under Hashem's direction. There is, of course, the Seira Yom HaKippurim, the Azazel, but that's the Rotzon Hashem. To show, there's the story of Yonah, where the sailors drew lots to work out who, but those are Goyim, and you don't take proof from Goyim, but it does show that Hashem's Hashkocha was permeating through the idea of drawing lots. All this is brought in a teshuva of Rav Chaim David Halevi, who's asking the Shaila whether you're allowed to use a Goyim for drawing lots, for giving out mitzvahs, like giving aliyahs in shul. And he paskens that it's perfectly alright. He says, in fact, it prevents machlokes. I was once asked to do something communally, and I was told I was chosen with a goyrel, but I think it was only told to me because they wanted to prevent machlokas of other people arguing. Anyway, so that, he says, is perfectly all right. And there's a lot of interesting questions brought in the poskim about if somebody makes a promise not to gamble, can we release them from this promise? Because people who get caught up with addictions, and we will discuss that in a minute if we've got time, people who get caught up with it, they make promises and then they break their promises and they go back into it again, and they're very angry with themselves when they've lost all their money, but they go back into it again like a cycle. And Rav Twersky writes in great detail about this, that it's like an illness and it's treatable and people have to do something about it. I've seen families breaking up because of gambling. Very sad stories come out because of it. And in Hanukkah, although many people have this custom, the Mishnah frowns against it. Hanukkah is for time for halal and tishbachos, and not for bittul Torah. And Shema Nafsha Yichat Mizeh, he says in the Bi'ur Halacha in Siman Tov Shin Ayin, one should distance oneself from it. However, the Sefer Nitei Gavriel does say that there is a custom, a minag l'hokel, but he says that if you do play with money on Hanukkah, it should only be in small amounts, and if you do win money, you should then give it back. So that you're playing for spiel, all right, but it's only in small amounts. The Maharam of Brunner says it's all right to gamble on Hanukkah, which is just once a year, and he says, give the money back. I remember my mother's uncle was once telling me that in Frankfurt, they had what they called the Frankfurt Purim. Many years ago, there were some Jewish people who would not learn on Xmas Eve because of nittel, and so they sat down and played cards instead. They were gambling. And some of the military police broke into this Jewish house to see what the Jews were doing on their holy night, and just the second before they broke in, a whole load of sfarim suddenly fell down from the shelves and were open. And they said, oh, it's all right, the Jews are learning from the holy books on our holy night, that's all right. And if they would have been caught gambling, they would have been severely prosecuted. So that's the story of the Frankfurt Purim. Coming back to the idea of vows, a person makes a promise, I will not gamble again. And then he goes to the Rav and says, look, I want to annul my vow, I want to do Hataras Nedarim. And many Rishonim said, you do not agree. You do not agree to nullify. The Rashba writes in Chelek Aleph of his Tshuvas Tov Shin Vav, he says, one who vows not to play dice and he wants to nullify, he says he can't stop himself. And he says the fellow argues it will lead to two evils, because then not only will he be doing the Issur of Gezeirah D'Rabbanon, but he'll also be going against his vow, which is also a prohibition. He says gambling is a sin, and therefore we don't release him from his vow. However, Reb Chaim Arzurua says that since a person is incapable of keeping his vow, we do nullify it. And he writes this in Siman Ayin, and the Rivash says something similar in chapter 281 of his Tshuvas. And the Shulti Geborim also says this on the Mordechai Shavuos Perek Gimel, that we do nullify because the desire of the person to do his gambling is so great when he's doing it regularly, that we do nullify the vow. But the view of the Rosh in the Sadr Shuvas Yud Aleph, and the Ridbaz in Yeridah and Yeresh Yud Dalad, and the Ran in Siman Nun Aleph, is also all to say no, we don't agree to nullify. The view of those who are lenient is saying that the person who is addicted to gambling is like, it's like his show gig. It's like inadvertent, because it's almost like onus. It's almost as though he's feeling forced, because such is the addiction and power of gambling. That's the view of Rav Tovia ben Elio of Vienna, who's brought in Hakos Mordechai in Shavuos. The Ran though says, no, you don't nullify because it's a sin, and you do not nullify a vow in order to enable a person to do a sin. Rav Meir Rothenberg says it's okay as long as this person has another job. What if a person says, look, I'm not going to gamble myself, but if it's all right if I get somebody to go on my behalf, that he can gamble for me? And the Ritbaz forbids this. It's just as if you're doing it yourself and you're still losing your money. So the Ritbaz in Siman Reish Yud Dalet says no. Rav Eliezer Papo, dying in Bulgaria, quoted the Rav Mordechai Hillel Ashkenazi, who was a pupil of the Maharami Rottenberg. He was sadly killed in the year Tovnun Ches. And he says, you must not help people with money if they're in addiction. You can help them in other ways, but you don't help them with money. It doesn't help. So what about, say, the National Lottery? Yes? I'll come to that. Well, we'll talk a bit about stocks and shares. Let's first deal with lottery. And of course, everybody, for personal questions, should ask their Rav, and I'm not here to give any psaks, but I just want to discuss a few sources which are interesting. The main modern writer who is very much against lotteries is Rav Avadia Yosef Shlita, who writes in his Shutz Yabia Omer, Chosh and Mishpot, Chelek Zayin, Simon Rav, a very long explanation why one should not deal with the Mifal HaPayis, which is the Israeli National Lottery. and he goes through all the whole background of the Gemara we've discussed with what is Asmachta and Gezeila Drabbanon and the views brought around through the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. And of course Rav Yosef Cairo was the Sephardi, and he is saying no to gambling. And he paskens osur, and he says even for Ashkenazim, he says they should not do it. He says because he regards it as an asmachta, such as the view of Rav Avadya Yosef Shlita. However, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who writes in his Chilas van Hoggis in a recent, well, Yechelek Dalud, in Choshen Mishpat Simon Shinyot Aleph, he says there's no asmachta. When you buy a lottery ticket, it's lo din of asmachta. He says an asmachta is where I promise to give, or to be makne, to transfer ownership. But when I've already bought my lottery ticket, the lottery hasn't yet taken place, and I've already bought that ticket when the event happens. And when I've got that ticket, he says, I can sell it. I've got a commodity. If I buy a national lottery ticket for £1, if you think I'm a lucky guy, you might buy it for £2. So I could sell it to you for £2. And he says, when you're doing the national lottery, you're not really going for all the money which has been put in it, because a lot of that money is given to charitable causes or uncharitable causes, or things that the government should really pay for, but we instead have to pay for. And so he says that when you're doing the national lottery, you're getting a prize. You're not getting all the money which was put into it. And the other thing is, if you lose on the national lottery, you don't have to pay anything more. You're not asked to fork out anything. So what you had done was spent. And then he goes into it in further detail, and he says, all the people, and he says so many numbers of people go into it, and there's no kesher between these people. There's no social interaction between all the people who are doing the lottery. And that is a contrast to a social group who are sitting together around the table involved in Bittul Torah, and he says there is an asmachta when there's the money on the table. And he compares this to something which was said by the Brisker of Rav Chaim Brisk, who talks about the butcher who asks a shaila about something which he thinks might be treifa, and he gets a negative psak. No, it's treif. So the butcher, okay, the butcher accepts it with perhaps some minor disappointment. He's got lots of other things to sell. It's not such a grave feeling of grief or disappointment, he says, but when one sues in court and one loses the case, one feels a pain, one feels much more, one feels hurt. He says that is the difference in emotion, says Rav Moshe Sternbuch, between gambling and the national lottery. When you're gambling, you really feel upset that you've lost when you've been playing that poker game. When you lose the national lottery, you take it in your stride. Well, you had a chance of 14 million to one. You didn't really expect to win, but okay, and everybody knows that the chances are very weak in a lottery. But when you're betting against another person, then there's more pain, and therefore he says that is when you've got the gezeila d'rabbono. And so when I do my lottery, I know even if I lose, and I'm almost certain that I'm going to lose, I'm relinquishing that £1. So he says it's like an investment at low cost, and with investments one is prepared to take chances in that respect and to lose. And this view is supported by Dayan Yaakov Rappaport, who quotes a Mishnah in Gemara Makkos in Daf Gimel about a woman who sells her kesuva, a woman who is still married but she's got kesuva rights, and if she's divorced she's entitled to her 200 zuz, which can be a lot of money nowadays. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that's about $30,000. So that kesuva is worth something. So a woman can sell her kesuva rights so that if her husband then dies or he divorces her, then she won't get that money from the kesuva, but the person who bought the kesuva will get that money. Well, that's not called gambling, he says. That is simply where she has sold a commodity which she owns.
If she dies first.
Well, the person who buys a ksuva is taking a risk. Yeah. Because if she dies, then that ksuva becomes worthless. He's lost everything. Okay. But if he dies first, or if he divorces her, then he gets more money.
What so the money she gets in selling ksuva belongs to her husband. So she doesn't benefit anyone.
But the kesuva rights are hers, not her husband's.
So she sells, so now she's got the money.
Well, he says that the money's hers. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel also writes on the Sefer Arlo Shel Torah. He says, if there is a gazela, if there is a theft, a gazela drabbono, it wouldn't be the person who buys the lottery ticket, because I've already paid. If so, if there is a gazela drabbono, surely it must be the manager of the lottery, not the person who buys the lottery ticket. Well, Camelot then would be responsible and not me. And he also says that even those who hold asmachta, it's only when you're asked to pay afterwards. Ein tanos asmachta lo mafreya. And I heard a couple of stories from Rabbi Sammy Merrill, a former member of this shul, who told me that there was a big gadol in Bnei Brak who used to make a point of buying a lottery ticket, Mifal HaPais, every week in order to give parnosa to the widow who was running the store. And the story is told very well in the story of Rav Zundel of Salant, who was a teacher of Rav Yisrael Salanta, who believed in the idea of hishtadlus, that you've got to do your part, and Hashem won't help me if I don't do my part. So he regularly bought a lottery ticket every week, and he frequently won, and he lived off the winnings. I heard, my son told me that Rabbi Falcon Gates had said that if you want to buy a lottery ticket, do it once, just once. Because if Hashem wants you to win, then you will win that one time.
Somebody came to him and said,
yes,
the husband was gambling or something, and this lottery bang around, spending lots of money. He put the husband in, he said, look, all you have to do is buy one. So
yeah.
Won.
You just, you won. Oh, you won. All right. Nice. Yeah, okay, so what about raffles? A lot of, most of us try and raise money with raffle tickets, Chinese auctions, various fundraising. On this, an interesting point, says Rav Moshe Sternbuch, ein din asmachta behektosh, that when you give something to hektosh, like to the Beis Hamikdosh, we're not worried about asmachta, lo kanya or kanya. You're giving it, it shows that you're giving it willingly, it's from your own free will, and therefore there's no problem in paying money into raffles, even if you feel that there is a ninyan of asmachta, irrespective of the other things we've discussed. And the Ben Ishchai says it's okay. Alright. You might ask the question, is it nice, is it right that North End and Hadass puts on a bingo evening to raise money for the shul? It's frowned upon by Poskim. Although the Maharam Mirosenberg says that for tzedakah, the practice is okay if it's a one-off. So the subject of addiction is something which we need to just touch on, even though it's quite wide. The Sefer Hasidim actually writes that one will end up losing all one's money by gambling. In 1516, there was a magefa, a plague, which hit the town of Cremonia in Italy, and three rabbonim stood up and declared that they attributed this plague to widespread gambling which was going on. In some parts of Europe, a few generations ago, there were even Jewish pubs, and gambling was common, and they made a declaration against it. The Pachad Yitzchok says the source of all tzaras in Klal Yisrael is from gambling. And the Shadas Tshuvas of the Rashba says that if you are owed money from gambling, it is forbidden to go to court to claim that money. So on the subject of gambling, there's a very interesting piece of Rabbi Yehuda Aria of Modena. He was from Venice in the 17th century. He wrote Shalos Tshuvos, and he writes that he himself got caught up in the addiction of gambling, and he lost a lot of money brought from it. And he wrote a Sefer Chai Yehuda on his 60th birthday, on the 17th of Tammuz, Tovshin Tzadi Aleph. He says, Nichnaso bi ruach shtus. A ruach shtus entered me, v'chazalti litzchok, and I went back, I had a relapse to this addiction of gambling. And he says, all the money that I earned from Rabbonus, from preaching and from Chazonus, I lost it. And as a result of that, they made a rule in 1626 that there should be no gambling in the town at all. However, the Ziknei Yehuda, he opposed anti-gambling decrees, but he admitted himself also that he had become compulsive to gambling money away, and the Kehillah in Kalir banned it. They made a cheirim about it, and this is referred to in the Shalos Tshuvos of the Rivash in Siman Kufay and Aleph. Rav David Hirsch writes that there are other problems which arise from gambling. People who go to casinos get mixed up, not only in Bittul Torah, there's a lot of paritzas in such places, there's a lot of Moshav Leitzim in such places, people are drinking, and even if technically you can argue, well, I'm not doing anything wrong because I've got another profession and it's not an asmachta, and you find all these heterim, it's pashnis for a Yiddish boy to go down these routes. And this does then bring us to the question of stocks and shares. futures, hedge funds, option trading. This is a fascinating question, which we'll deal with just briefly. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel writes about it, and he says there is a difference here. When you are buying commodities, first of all, when you buy, assuming that you've got some seichel in your head, you're usually doing so from an element of skill. You study the market, you've been looking at what goes up, what goes down, and if you master the market properly and you understand it, then with that skill you will probably make money out of it. So he says, whereas gambling is generally something which is left to chance, we don't quite have, although there is a chance and there is a fine comparison between the two, he says you will use skill or try and use your skill when it comes to buying commodities. The other thing is, when you're buying a commodity, you're buying a share in a company. You are helping that company by putting money into it in order to finance itself, to have more investment in it, to open up wider horizons for that company. You have a right to vote in the annual general meeting of that company. You're actually owning part of that company when you're buying shares, even if you're buying them for only a short period of time. So you can't call that gezel. That's not an inyan of stealing in any form. And then also, it's not anything which is to do with yeshuvo shel olam. It's not the normal manner of the world. It's quite normal in yeshuvo shel olam to buy a share in a property or in a company or commodities or whatever. So, and there's no gezeiro. You're not pasul eidos then if you're buying and selling in shares. I found a very interesting Shem Mishmuel. In Yom HaKippurim, Shem Mishmuel, in the subject of Yom Kippur, in the Sefer Omdad in Kuf Mem Aleph, this is the Socket Shavah, and he writes about a person who is addicted to gambling, because he's talking about the subject of Teshuvah under Yom Kippur, and how is it possible for a person to engage in Teshuvah when he is so addicted to gambling that it's like onus? A person feels like he's forced. Just like people are addicted to alcohol and nebuch other things, they are down a route where they feel helpless. First of all, he uses the expression of korov la'onos. It's not completely onos. A person can get help. There are psychologists who specialize in giving treatment, how to get out of these things. There are these support groups. There's Gamblers Anonymous and so on. People can get support and pull themselves out of this rut when they are caught in gambling, which can be so self-destructive. But he asks an interesting question, because he quotes the Rivash in his Tshuva, Simon Kuf Ayin Beis, Benishba shelo lesachek bekuvya, a person who makes a shivua that I will not do gambling anymore. So he says, Osu leilech lemokav shiye muchrach laver al shivuoso. It's forbidden for a person even to go near a place where he might then go against his shivua. And one should not put oneself into formal onus. What's he saying? Something very interesting here. He says, if you are in a situation where you are an addict and you feel as though you can't help yourself, although, as we said, you can get treatment, and you are therefore considering yourself to be onus, forced, and you're like a shogeg, unintentional, he says, alright, you can't help it. Where is the issur? The prohibition then is the trigger. Then the prohibition is to go anywhere near a trigger which will lead you to do that. That means to say that you mustn't go anywhere near the casino. It's perfectly permitted for you to walk past a betting shop in Halacha. Right, okay, you can't walk down Bread Street without walking past the betting shop. But he is saying that if you are addicted to gambling, and if you walk past that betting shop, you will feel compelled to go in there and to gamble. He says, what did he say? You mustn't go near there at all. Get somebody to do your shopping for you. Buy by mail order. But no, go to Brent Cross where there's no betting shop. But don't go anywhere near such a place where the trigger will then bring you into that frame of mind. And I found this a fascinating piece, because so often we get caught up easily where we feel as though we didn't have enough resistance built into us to be able to withstand certain temptations. And it's a classic thing in the Musa Sefarim, don't put yourself into an asayon, don't put yourself into a situation where you'll have to choose between right and wrong. Don't go anywhere near it. Alright, you might say then, well, I haven't then had the temptation and therefore I'm not a tzaddik. Don't have to think like that. You don't have to put yourself in a situation where calamity can become you. And that can apply to any form of Aveira whatsoever, that you know yourself that what your weaknesses are, assuming that you do know yourself. It takes a lifetime to get to know oneself. So therefore, using the message from the Shemesh Shmuel and this Rivash, we should conduct our lives in such a style that we don't even put ourselves near to these temptations, because we know what pitfalls there are. And when it comes to gambling in particular, there have been such miserable stories of people losing everything, their houses being taken over by the bank, marriages breaking up, children suffering, the misery which can come out of this. So even if technically you're okay in having your occasional flutter because you are flying your plane once a week, technically you're okay, but one has to be aware of the wider picture and what Menschlichkeit really is about and what we're really here for in our tachlis. And therefore, a person will be careful in avoiding these kinds of things wherever possible. Thank you very much. Yes.
Some people say that betting on sports is not like gambling because it involves skill. There's an amount of skill involved in shooting.
I think you could say, you're saying that in sports there may be skill and you know this football team is better than that football team and therefore you put money on it, but you're still leaving something to chance. You still, although with your skill, and that is the problem, because we're comparing it to stocks and shares. There is true a skill in maybe playing a game of poker, because there's bluff involved and so on, and therefore a good poker player will definitely beat me, right? But nevertheless, there is something left to chance, and it does come under Masachik Bekuvio, because the Mafricha Yonim with flying of pigeons may have some skill. There are Mafarshim who speak about this, that even where there is skill involved, there is some element always left to chance, and it is not the Yeshuva Shel Olam.
You can say that about a lot of business activity there.
Yeah, there are people who have invested lots of money, and they invested in Iceland, and I know someone who's lost millions. But it's not regarded halakhically in the same way as gambling is. Although, if it's done recklessly, you may well say that that was gambling. Yes.
I presume things
Well, the bottom line is ask a personal shayla to the Rav if you feel that what you're doing does not conflict with the principles we've been discussing. Yeah, but with stocks and shares you are still having an ownership. You can sell on what you have bought, although it might go down in value. You can turn up at the annual general meeting. It's not the same kind of thing when you are doing a flutter on a horse.
Yeah, but spread betting, you don't actually own any of
that. Right, well,
it's like buying the shares without actually buying them.
Yeah, when you're buying shares without buying them,
you can bet you can spread that on the weather as well.
I'll have to leave it there, because it goes down a route which can be quite controversial. Yeah.
I've got a friend who's currently running.
Yes.
His job is running a trust, a Sukkah foundation.
Yes.
But the money for the Sukkah foundation came from another Jewish guy who made a fortune from sports betting. He had a sports betting, he turned it into a business.
Well,
and then made a fortune, and now my friend is running a foundation, a charity foundation based on that money.
If a successful gambler ends up giving a lot of money to Stocker, the shayla is obviously, is it a mitzvah bo baveiro? I wouldn't like to get drawn down that discussion. Yes. Sorry? Yes.
Okay. And the next day, he said, we can't build a yeshiva based on...
So Rav Moshe Schwab gave back money, which was from a gambling win. even though it was donated to a worthy cause of Beit Sedra Shuva. Shkoyach.